And now, Dr. Hahn.
Thanks, Ruth. You're always a hard act to follow. I'm happy to be here today and to represent my colleagues, Amanda Fallon and Audrey Darville, who aren't here today. Amanda's actually a postdoc at UCSF and just left us in May or June after she graduated. So, and she's done some interesting work. We've all, as nurses, I'm very proud of us as a team to provide a lot of leadership for our university to go tobacco-free. How many of you work at universities or facilities that are tobacco-free inside and out? Okay, so about half of you. Awesome. Congratulations. You know, that's not a hard, that's a not an easy thing. And, of course, we sit in the middle of tobacco country. Kentucky's one of the national leaders in growing tobacco. We have a big presence with tobacco in our state. Part of the reason that we went tobacco-free, I think, to be honest, is because our nursing team had for years done a lot of smoke-free policy work and had already laid the groundwork for this policy, and I think that helped to some degree to make our university want to go tobacco-free. And just as a disclosure, we have a new clinical translational science center, and so I am disclosing that I'm a co-investigator in that. Also, just to give you a little background, many of you know that the trend has moved pretty quickly where colleges and universities and healthcare campuses have gone tobacco-free inside and out. And I guess one of my main points today is that public health nurses can really provide leadership here because we're kind of the logical ones to do this. And I'm going to share with you some of the tricks that we've used to make this happen on our campus. But also, I think we can change that culture that Ruth mentioned, that culture of expectations about tobacco use by changing the norm in these tobacco-free policies. And this is really the reason we do it. I mean, in our state and around the country, we spend entirely too much money taking care of sick people from smoking and using tobacco. And even secondhand smoke itself is estimated to cause $10 billion a year by making non-smokers sick. And so, you know, we've got, not only do we have a reason for health reasons, we have money reasons for making this happen. So what I want to do in the next few minutes is just illustrate for you some of the key contributions that we as a public health nurse team were able to make in our university kind of getting this ongoing tobacco-free campus initiative going at the University of Kentucky, which is probably, and I don't have the numbers, but our university probably takes more tobacco company money than just about any place in the country. I mean, we have a large College of Agriculture that is primarily totally funded by Reynolds American. And so we're in an interesting, you know, situation where tobacco companies certainly give a lot of money to our university. So to be tobacco-free was kind of an interesting, or to be tobacco-free is an interesting example of, I think, what you can do. If you can do it at the University of Kentucky, you can probably do it just about anywhere. And I want to give you kind of some tips to how we evaluated our model. I want to tell you what our model is and kind of how we evaluated it. So in 2009, we went totally tobacco-free. That's our main building, and we spent 5 months coming up with our message, our sign. We engaged over about 200 people to make this happen, and that's what public health nurses do best, is try to engage the community, and we did somehow. I'm not quite sure how we did it, but it was interesting the first meeting we had because people just kind of looked at me like I was an alien, you know, and somehow they changed their mind over the course of this process. But our sign is "Welcome to our tobacco-free campus," very positive message. And then the tagline at the bottom, which you probably can't read, but you'll see in another slide, is "It's a healthy place to live, work, and learn." That's our goal, a healthy place to live, work, and learn. And you can see the administrative regulation covers really everywhere. It's a comprehensive policy. All owned, operated, leased, occupied, controlled buildings, building structures, parking structures, even personal vehicles that are parked on our property. No smoking areas at all. And I insisted on that. When the president asked me if I would co-chair this, I said I would, but only if it could be comprehensive. And so, you know, the science is just starting to emerge that outdoor tobacco smoke is harmful. And so we don't have the massive science that we have on indoor exposure to secondhand smoke, but we do know that outdoor tobacco smoke is detected up to 6 feet away from one person who's smoking. And if you have more than one smoker, you recommend at least 20 feet away. But the problem with that is if you've tried to have designated areas, people don't like stay. I say they bleed because what a smoker does is they see people over there smoking in that smoking area over there and they light up immediately. And in fact, a lot of my colleagues around the country say, yeah, we let them smoke in their cars, but on the way to the cars, on the way to the parking lot, you see cigarette butt, lining. So the reality about these policies is you've got to make them comprehensive. Giving a space to smoke, like a smoking hut, really isn't consistent with the goal of the policy. It doesn't encourage quitting, certainly, and it doesn't provide a healthy environment to live, work, and learn. So we insisted that it be comprehensive. And so, interestingly, our team contributed in several ways, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We took 10 months to implement, and I might just say that we're unique because our board of trustees decided from the top that they were going to do it. We didn't have to lobby. We didn't have to advocate. The decision was made. But then we had to pull together people to make it their own. And so we had 200 stakeholder groups. We had 25 different sectors that were around the table. And in a college of nursing, I pretty much was sitting, pretty isolated from the rest of the campus. And so I thanked the president for asking me to do it because I learned. I know every little part of our campus now, and I know everyone. I know more people than I ever thought I would know. So it was a great opportunity, really. And so we integrated the policy into existing code of conduct and corrective action procedures, and I would totally encourage you, if you're going to go this way, that you integrate it into what's already going on. Also essential is to make sure that you have good access to nicotine replacement therapy and other pharmacotherapies to help people quit. And it's not just people, but employees, students, sponsor dependents, everyone, plus counseling. So here's our model. It's pretty easy. It's like stop, drop, and roll for fire prevention. It's tell, treat, and train. This is the model that we've used, and I've named it tell, treat, and train. So the first thing that we did as nurses was said, look, we got to figure out how to tell people about the policy. So we have a whole plan, an integrated communication plan with clear signs. The message are very positive, very upbeat. The logo at the bottom is our logo, and the sign in the middle is the sign, and then the sign at the top was kind of like soon, kind of soon we're going to be tobacco free. And I think it's critical that you relay the goal of the policy early and often. You have got to tell people why. You're not just doing it to take their rights away, and in our climate, very politically conservative, Rand Paul is one of our senators, I hate to tell you, and I'm not proud of that. But he, we live in a very strong Tea Party state, and they want everybody to stay out of their business. So, to adopt a policy like this, you have got to use the health message all the time, backwards and forwards, because that's what it's about. So you tell, you treat, and so we provide nicotine replacement for 12 weeks for free. They have to be involved in a behavioral component. We have a large menu of options for them to do group, individual, other things. And then we have discount NRT available for symptom management. This is a part of our policy I think is essential, that people don't have to be uncomfortable on our campus. They can comply because they can use gum or patches or lozenges. Thirdly, you want to train. You want to be sure people know how to approach a violator, and this is just one example of our scripting that we use. And we do have ambassadors that we've trained, and this year that's really taking off. The ambassadors are students and primarily staff, and they, are trained in the scripting, very positive. They get people where they need to be to get nicotine replacement. And these little cards, Amanda Fallon, one of her dissertation studies was to pass these cards out to just simply remind, it's a positive self-efficacy message, to remind them about the policy, that there are resources to help them quit. And oh, by the way, have a free drink, a free fountain drink, not alcohol, lemonade, iced tea, maybe some soda, which is, we kind of downplay the soda, on us. And you'd be amazed, I'm going to show you data, well, now actually, some of the evaluation data from that in a minute. Anyway, these data, I'm just going to give you a little flavor for what we found. In the 20 months after the policy went into effect, we've had a 9-fold increase in use of our programs, which is pretty impressive. We've gone from, on average, about 3 per month, 3 people who were demanding tobacco treatment or asking for tobacco treatment to about 28 per month, 28, so about a 9-fold increase. So pretty impressive. We haven't spent all this that much money. Look at the bottom line. So before the campus-wide policy went into effect, we were spending almost $6,000 a year. And then, you know, really over that 20-month period, only spent about $14,000. That's a drop in the bucket for an institution. It did help that Audrey, our tobacco treatment specialist, who's also one of my colleagues, helped the pharmacy. We negotiated a better per coupon rate, and so now it's about $17 per 2-week coupon, which is really inexpensive. If you look at the price of NRT at Walmart, for example. My colleague Amanda, this is just one of her dissertation studies, and what she did was picked up cigarette butts. She developed a protocol where you picked up cigarette butts as a measure of compliance, right? So if you have more cigarette butts, that means more people are smoking. And so she just used that simple little message card that said, hey, remember about our policy, you can get a free drink, and passed about 6,000 cards in about 3 days in high traffic areas. And we had a significant decline in cigarette butts after that very simple intervention. So I guess one of my messages is you can be as innovative as you want to. We've also had a lot of hits to our website, significant increases in hits to our site. And so what have we learned? You know, you got to get administrative support. Public health nurses are going to go, well, of course, we know that. We do that all the time. You know, lead on public health, don't pull. I get a lot of calls around the country from places that want to do this and say, well, we got to get our student government to vote on it. And I said, no, you don't. You know, no, you don't. This is public health. This is changing. It's fighting the industry. And in fact, I could tell you stories, which I won't have time to. I will, if I have 2 minutes, I'll tell you a few stories, because we have been targeted by the industry. We've seen a lot of industry. They've taken over our Facebook page, for example, and we've had to take Facebook posts off. And when we did that, they went to the College of Nursing Facebook page, and then we had to take those off. And we've had 6 open records requests. We haven't had a lawsuit yet, but we've really. And so I'm telling you, this is a good intervention because the industry doesn't like it at all. People are quitting. So these are just some of the lessons learned. You can read about. I guess sustaining the infrastructure is something I do want to highlight, because a lot of places say, oh, good, we put the policy in place, we're done, we're tired. And I'll tell you what, we're busier now than we ever were before the policy went into effect. And that's critical. There's some literature actually on smoke-free hospitals that say that when those places, when those groups disband, implementation of the policy goes to the tube. So you got to stay on top of it all the time. And creating that climate of compliance versus doing heavy-handed enforcement is really important. So just to conclude here, you know, public health nurses, I think, are prepared. I think we can provide critical leadership. We have a lot of credibility, as Ruth mentioned. I think one of the reasons we've been so successful is because we have that credibility on our campus, and I've been able, as a tenured full professor, to lead the charge and be kind of the bad cop, if you will. And I'm willing, I have broad shoulders, and I'm really willing to take, you know, as much controversy as they want to throw me. And the president of our very university actually knows that, and he has deferred a lot of stuff to me and just said, you know, we can't control this woman. You know, she's crazy. No, he doesn't say that. But you know, I think it does. It takes somebody who's not afraid of controversy, because you get it every day. But it's okay. So having a certified tobacco treatment specialist in ANRP like Audrey, who can prescribe, is crucial. It took me 6 years to convince my healthcare system to hire her. And the only reason I got her is because they decided to do a policy change. And I said, we're not if you want me to lead it, we're not doing it without a certified tobacco treatment specialist, and she better be full-time, and I'm not paying for her. So they got the money, and they got her in there. So, you know, again, it's just putting your foot down and saying, no, we're not doing it half-assed, excuse me. You know, we're going to do it right and make sure that there's plenty of room for innovation. And when any place where there's students, there's innovation. And I was so proud of Amanda as a BSN student. She was in our BSN to PhD. I wish she were here. She's flying back to California right now. But, you know, she did her BSN. She went right into the PhD program. She took this on. She developed a protocol. She tested an intervention. She got her doctoral degree, and now she's a postdoc in Ruth's shop. So I'm proud of her. So, yeah, so I guess my last word is just, you know, this changes culture of expectation. I love this little guy. You know, you can't smoke in here, so... and I think in our case, in Kentucky, in the belly of the beast, where, you know, tobacco is king in many ways, we just took it on, you know, head on. It's the only way you can do it. So I need to run, but I don't know if you want me to just see if there's one or two questions,
yeah.
And then I'm going to run across the street. So, yeah. Thank you.
So I have a question. You mentioned that the policy incorporated
Uh-huh. Yeah, Kentucky is not a union state, fortunately or unfortunately, so we didn't even really have to worry about that. In fact, we have very few unions. I mean, in our manufacturing we do, but at the university it's really not an issue. But you would have to, and I would recommend you do, if that's a issue for you. Sorry. We have an easy case, in some ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming that he or she is really very supportive of it.
Oh, yeah.
The partnership, if you make his sort of job easier and vice versa, like if she's supportive and yet then you can be the fall guy.
Yeah. It's a great thing. And actually, my co-chair, I didn't mention this, is the vice president for campus services. His background is law enforcement, which is a really nice, you know, a nurse. Who's ready to take the fall guy, and then a law enforcement guy that is very political, by the way, and is very good at what he does. So we're a great team, you know, and I don't have to worry, I'm tenured too. And, you know, he's staff. And so, again, he's the good cop, and I'm the bad cop. Yeah.
Did you have any pushback aside from
mental health? Interesting that you should ask. Not on our campus. Our counseling center, for example, is amazing. Our psych mental health on our campus is amazing, and they get it. Now, we do have a state hospital in Lexington, and that's another story, but they are now, just after, you know, 4 years, deciding that they will go tobacco-free, and they're not anymore giving cigarettes as, rewards, you know. But that's an ongoing challenge. But that's based in a lot of myth and misperception, you know. And there's plenty of data now to show that mental health populations want to quit. They can quit. You can treat them with some tweaks. If Audrey were here, she could answer that. But she's had a lot of success with substance abusing and chronically mentally ill populations. Yeah. Well, we don't find people, but what happens is when students get reported to the dean of students in the student code of conduct, that is in there, and it's a tailored approach. And so, for example, one guy, all that it took to get him to comply was not to let him deregister. So she put a hold on his registration. Another person, she went ahead and did an educational assessment. We don't call it a fine. It's there, but we don't write tickets. I mean, we're very careful to make this a culture of compliance versus let's make it a heavy-handed. And part of that's Anthony, my co-chair, because with his security and kind of police background, he really doesn't want to go that way. Because then, you know, especially young people, you know, they can make this a cause. And, they, you know, it's much better to create that climate and be in it for the long haul.
Or are there other buildings?
Oh, no. I didn't bring the map. If you get on our website, uky.edu, tobacco-free, look at the map and you'll see it's all cut out with property at the edges. It's pretty messy. It's not a traditional, it's not set apart. We sit in a city, so we have lots of issues with sidewalks, and which I didn't have time to really get into. I think he had a question real quick.
I'm curious, how many universities in the United States are smoke-free, and how close are we to normalizing smoke-free universities using that normalized term that
you used in the lab? Yeah, about 550 or 60 are tobacco-free, but they really vary in terms of what that means. If you get on ANR's website, there's a list of them, but again, it's kind of hard to say. A lot of the community colleges have come way before the large, land grant institutions. We were, probably one of the few beginning ones, large land grant institutions that went tobacco free. Well, like I said, ANR's website says that there are over 500 that have done that. But again, my personal, and I don't know, he's gone, Kevin, or might know, but my personal experience is when you actually talk to them, call them up, they'll go, oh, well, yeah, you can smoke in your car. We do have this little designated area over there, So I think it varies. Real quick, yeah, one more.
Uh-huh.
It is. And I'll just say one more thing about it. And there are campuses, and we're not one of them because our legal was very specific. That's not our sidewalk. You can't enforce it there. But Miami University of Ohio, for example, they decided if I clean that sidewalk when it snows or there's ice and our university is cleaning it, fair game. And they enforce it on sidewalks, whether it's theirs or not. And I said, you go. But I'll tell you, our attorneys wouldn't let us. They were too worried about liability. So I'm going to run. I'm sorry. You know how to get a hold of me. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Stella. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.